Welcome to Herb W. Morgan's Slaying Bulls and Bears, a podcast about economics, markets, investing, politics, and profit. Every Monday, in less than 20 minutes, Wall Street portfolio manager Herb W. Morgan distills the complex and complicated into the simple and sensical. Here's Herb now.
Officer here at Cantor Fitzgerald Managed ETF Portfolios. This is my weekly market and economic commentary for the week that began yesterday, Monday, April 15th, 2024. Recording this on Tuesday, number one, I was traveling yesterday. And number two, there was a couple of little pieces of information and data. And there was some Federal Reserve chairman speaking today that took place that I wanted to get sort of under the belt before I put out this commentary. As a reminder, you can find me intra-week if I've got something to say. Don't always have that. On LinkedIn, follow me on LinkedIn, Herb Morgan, or on the Twitter, at ETF_strategist. Okay, moving along. No part of this commentary should be construed as investment advice. This is for informational purposes only. It's available both to individual investors and to financial advisors. Okay, last week we had a sea of red, the only exception being floating rate debt, which of course makes complete sense. You can see S&P down 1.5, really cutting into the year-to-date gains. But hey, it's April 16th and we're up almost 8% on the S&P. Small cap stocks have continued and are now negative 3% for the year. International markets, everything down. Emerging markets sort of held up the best. Fixed income continues to go down on fears of inflation staying higher for longer. Therefore, interest rates need to stay higher for longer to compensate for that. And you can see here that the 20-plus year Treasury index now down 7.75%. So interesting. Last year, rates were going up, up, up. Bonds are supposed to go down. No, they didn't. The Treasuries ended up with a positive return last year. And here we are with expectations of rate cuts now not materializing, really selling off in Treasuries, 20-year plus index down about 8%. Let's get into the data from last week, and then I want to get into a couple of macroeconomic points, things that I want to talk about with you. Let's start with the National Federation of Independent Business, Small Business Optimism Index. This fell yet again. You can see it over here on the right. This is more than an 11-year low. This January 24th, this goes back to 14. We've been through all kinds of different things, but small businesses and small business owners are just not feeling good about this economy. Why? It's inflation and the availability of labor. The labor market remains incredibly tight, which in and of itself is a contributor to inflation. The expectations for sales going forward and their expectations to spend more or invest more in the form of capital outlays continues to decline. So this is not a good report. Doesn't speak well. Okay, move on. Other data. Here we go. CPI and PPI last week were probably the two most important, very, very critical. The March CPI or Consumer Price Index up 0.4%, that exceeded expectations for that metric, and the year over year gain in CPI, which is blue, is at 3.5. More important is core CPI, which backs out food and energy because they can have volatile moves that distort the data in the short term. We like to look at both, and that is at 3.8% year over year. That is almost double the Fed's target rate for inflation of 2%, which they define as price stability. I think 0% is price stability, but 2% is the objective. It's what they're shooting for, and they're not getting it. They're raising interest rates. They're running assets off their balance sheet, but inflation is simply not coming down. In fact, there's a good chance, and I would even argue that it has reaccelerated and is likely to continue to reaccelerate. The next day, we got the PPI or Producer Price Index. Here, year over year is 2.1. Core, again, backing up food and energy. There it's 2.4. So yes, we're closer to the Fed's target of 2 when it comes to producer prices. Of course, the Fed uses a third metric, which is called core PCE, personal consumption expenditures. And that's, of course, coming later on this month. So CPI disappointed, PPI disappointed. And so the market said, well, the Fed can't be cutting interest rates if inflation is too high. They have been raising interest rates in order to curtail inflation, and they're not getting the effect. One argument would be that it takes time. There's a policy lag. There's a lag from the time you implement a policy until you see the benefits. That's true. Of course it is. But it has been very stubborn, and now we're seeing data suggest it's going to reaccelerate, or it has started to reaccelerate. Moving on, weekly claims for unemployment, incredibly low, 211,000. This has been a really boring story. I've been telling you for 2 years, it's a great boring story to tell. We are not getting the big layoffs. The economy is not slowing down. We know that there are more job openings than there are employees. In fact, go back to that NFIB small business survey, and they're saying we just can't get the quality of employee because there's so few unemployed people. And of the ones that are unemployed, I'm not speaking for everybody, but you know, when you have to lay off or let people go, you don't let your best people go. So it's a smaller and smaller pool to pick from. And so in order to entice employees, employers must raise wages. This is great. This is the promise of capitalism, lifting up the poor and the middle class. But at the present time, it's contributing to some of the inflationary pressures and causing a little bit of a headache for our friends at the Federal Reserve. Import prices in March up 0.4%, up 0.4 from a year ago, so not crazy there. Import ex petroleum unchanged, export up 0.3%. So no real inflationary relief there either. Michigan consumer sentiment. This is University of Michigan survey, comes out every month. And here they say that, you know, it was down a little bit. Now we're up from where we were. Let's be fair, right? We really tanked down during COVID, got down really low, reopening, et cetera, but we're nowhere near the levels we were prior to COVID. And let's talk about this inflation reaccelerating. And I know if I looked at those charts of CPI and PPI, you said, well, maybe it's just a stall on the way down. And that would be a reasonable question to ask or a reasonable statement to make. But we also look at other indicators. One of the ones I look at is the five-year inflation break-evens. These are traded futures contracts, very substantial amount of institutional capital trades in these markets. And if you go to, okay, this is where we were back. When did the Fed start cutting rates? Hiking rates. It's been 2 years now. 2 years now since they started doing that. And we are at a higher forward inflation break even than we were a year ago. We were at 2.4. We're now at almost 2.6. That's up from 2.1 at the beginning of this year. So the markets are saying not only is inflation going higher, it's going higher for the next 5 years. This is going to make the Fed's job very, very difficult. So if you were to take this graph, expand it, and then add in the Fed funds rate, right? This is when we started hiking rates. It's been 2 years. And immediately, the five-year inflation break even started to come down, right? Now, I'm not saying inflation started to come down immediately. It was a lag. But the break evens react to what they see going on in the future. And here, this is that same break even chart that I showed you just one slide ago, right here. That, as you can see, is very seriously reaccelerating, is now at the highest level it's been in well over a year. So now, you know, so much for the Fed's going to cut 3 times this year or 2 times, or they're going to cut in June. There's no way they're cutting in June. There's no way they're cutting in July. Even right now, the futures market suggests it's kind of 50-50 for a September rate cut. I think there's no rate cut this year, because of this problem we have of reaccelerating inflation. And what's got me frustrated is everybody keeps pointing at the Fed saying, you have to fix this inflation problem. Well, the Fed has some tools. There's no doubt the Fed has a statutory mandate. But what else is contributing to the inflation problem? And I think the biggest contributor is out of the control of the Fed. And it's the fact that the U.S. Congress spends more than it takes in. Now, that in and of itself is not always a bad thing. We do that in times of war. We do that in times of recession. Keynesian theory suggests in a recession, you spend, you stimulate your economy. And the other benefit that we have as Americans, we're the world's reserve currency. Without getting into an entire master class on what it means to be the world's reserve currency, we are afforded a luxury of being able to run some fiscal deficits for an extended period of time. Our economy grows, there are assets, et cetera. But deficits at this level of 6% of GDP are, that's excess demand that doesn't exist. It's a pull forward of future demand that causes prices to go up. And this, I think, is the main culprit. And what I'm disappointed in the Fed for here is not that they're not utilizing their tools. They are. But they, I think that the voting members of the FOMC should say so in their press conferences. They should say so when they're talking to groups or giving lectures and say, hey, we're raising rates. We're running off our balance sheet. We're doing our job. But Congress at 6% fiscal debt to GDP is not doing theirs. You can see this goes back to the 1960s. Even in the periods of the Vietnam War, deficits were not even 5% of GDP. And of course, the spending of the Vietnam War, taking us off the gold standard, led to the significant inflation of the 1970s. Massive deficit to GDP, almost, you know, more than 15, almost 20% for COVID. But we are still running at a level. This is what's keeping that inflation in the economy. And I don't think there's a whole lot the Fed can do about it. And so we've got to figure out what to do. And the question that I got probably, I don't know how many of you called yesterday or emailed, there's quite a few, and there was two more this morning, about, hey, is this time for risk off? Is this time for a major correction in the market? And I would answer that the same way. Maybe. We have corrections every year. We haven't had a correction of any real size in over a year in equity prices. They've been a nice run straight up, mostly on the anticipation of rate cuts that are not happening. Also in anticipation of the benefits from artificial intelligence working their way through the economy. And so last week, the sell-off, I don't think it had anything to do with this realization that interest rate cuts are not coming. We've known that. I believe we've known that for some time. But it had everything to do with the geopolitical risk and uncertainty around Iran and Israel. So equity markets are down 3.5%. Big deal. That's nothing. And they're doing that in the face of major geopolitical uncertainty. This is very significant and very serious what's going on over there. The Iranian attack on Israel. What will Israel's response be? How large will it be? How contained will it be? Will that then escalate Iran further? Was the Iranian attack sort of a smokescreen for a bigger attack to come? We don't know. But we've got this stubborn inflation. Investors have alternatives now. You can get a 5% U.S. Treasury bill right now for about 2 years. And so really the question is, why haven't markets corrected further? Or some people think, well, maybe they're about to correct further. I think it would be fine if they did. If we went down 10% from the high, no big deal. We usually do that, like I said, once a year, 10, 12, 15%. So why is this risk-off trade in the face of higher inflation, the face of fiscal deficits, the face of geopolitical risk, why aren't markets selling off? I mean, really, they have 2.5, 3.5%. It's not a big deal. It's because the market has become increasingly more focused. You hear talk about the Mag 7. The market is big tech. Market is Apple, Amazon, Salesforce, Facebook, Alphabet, Google. This is the market now. And these companies, we could do a whole masterclass on the free cash flow. At the end of the day, these companies are making massive amounts of money. They have very significant barriers to competitive entry around their businesses. Who's going to replace Microsoft? Who's going to say, you know what, I don't want to run my company on Microsoft Office anymore. I'll run it on something else. It's not worth it. You couldn't change. You can't share files back and forth with other companies. And so what's happening is just massive free cash flow. I think I heard last week in a report I read on Amazon that the trailing 12 months free cash flow is $36 billion. That's $36 billion. So these companies have accumulated massive amounts of cash. By the way, they're earning 5% treasuries on that cash now, and that's helping earnings as well. And 2 years ago, they earned 0% on their cash. Many of them still haven't started to pay dividends. They have enacted stock buybacks, and they currently can't until after the earnings. So they're likely to resume those buybacks after these earnings coming up in the next few weeks. Big tech is coming up. We've been through the financials. And many of them, companies like Google, Amazon, so forth, haven't put on a dividend yet. And they're likely to do that. And then we've got the biggest one of all, the largest company by market cap, and that's Apple Computer. Apple is the S&P 500. Apple is the NASDAQ composite. And Apple's been very, very quiet, and the stock's been down and is now at a fairly reasonable valuation relative to where it's been, in my opinion. Are they about to make an AI announcement at their developers conference? There's a lot of talk that they could. And if they could, and the earnings are great and the buybacks resume and some of these companies initiate dividends, could the market then take off and make a leg higher? It certainly could. And this is my point in telling you all this is anytime the market sells off 3%, 4%, 5%, my phone rings. And you say, should I be doing something different? It's a natural biological reaction. I'm feeling pain. Should I do something different? And the answer is no. You're paying us to do that. We do that. We make the changes, the allocations when we think appropriate. I think that the risk up down is balanced. I think the largest risk right now is geopolitical. And if there's a geopolitical escalation in the Middle East, I think we have a risk off scenario and the markets sell off and you get that 8 or 10% correction in the equity markets. We always have the Fed could cut. Right. If all of a sudden risk is off and financial conditions deteriorate and they haven't yet, if all that were to happen, Fed could quickly come to the rescue. The other thing about geopolitical disruptions in markets is they tend to be quickly reversed in my experience. So you get a sell off, you panic, you feel horrible about your net worth for a month or two. And then all of a sudden, here comes the Fed and here comes the market and things go right back up. So I don't think even though I think an 8 to 10% correction is probably more likely today than it was a month ago. I don't think there's anything to do about it. And I don't think anybody should be particularly worried about it. Okay, in terms of data this week, we're looking at New York State manufacturing. Retail sales came in yesterday. They were better than expected. Business inventories, housing sentiment. Today, we've got housing starts and building permits, industrial production, capacity utilization. Beige book for the next Fed meeting comes out on Wednesday. Weekly claims, existing home sales. None of these are of particularly large importance. What is of particularly large importance this week is where we go with earnings and what happens on the geopolitical front and where we are with earnings. Just today, I'm sorry to turn my head away. I have to look at the screen here, but Johnson & Johnson beat, guided a little lower, B of A beat, Morgan Stanley beat. And as I look, every company that reported today beat. So that $250 per share forward estimate for the S&P 500 is looking better and better. Don't forget, this is available. This is a YouTube with video, with me, with the slides and graphs on the YouTube channel. The name of it is Slaying Bulls and Bears. You can also listen to it on any podcast format. Thank you so much. Be back to you again in 1 week.
Thank you for listening to Slaying Bulls and Bears. If you'd like to download the slides for this week's podcast, go to www.efficient-portfolios.com and join our mailing list. Don't forget to subscribe to our YouTube channel, rate us online, and share with a friend if you found this helpful. See you next week.